This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. In this next story from NHPR's podcast, Stranglehold, co-host Lauren Chooljian uncovers how the state's first-in-the-nation primary affects the local media and the role those reporters play in bolstering the state's place as number one.
New Hampshire thinks it's special that the first-in-the-nation primary gives us this extra relevance or power and maybe a little bit of ego that doesn't usually come along with living in a small state. It's why, for decades, young, green reporters would move here.
I don't know. I just thought that I was like hot and that, oh, am I allowed to swear?
Yes, that is Sarah Koenig. And in case you don't recognize her voice or her name, maybe this will ring a bell.
For the last year, I've spent every working day trying to figure out where a high school kid was.
Before she was host of the mega hit podcast Serial, before she was a producer at This American Life, Sarah Koenig was looking for a job at a big city newspaper.
Yeah, summarily got rejected by paper after paper after paper.
It was the 90s, and she tried to get a gig at the Baltimore Sun.
And he said, we can't hire you yet. You don't have enough, like, daily experience. But, like, here's a list of really good smaller papers that you should apply to. And I think the Monitor was on there. So I was like, okay. And I did exactly what he told me to do.
And something clicked.
Oh, right. First in the nation primary.
I've got one thing in mind. To earn every vote I possibly can and to win those most important primary of New Hampshire.
That's why today I announce that I am a candidate for President of the United States.
At the time, local coverage was often the first and only source of information for New Hampshire voters. Think about it. This is 2000. That year and for decades before, voters weren't scrolling Twitter or reading national papers online for campaign coverage. The Concord Monitor had a really loyal readership. So local editors at the Monitor and elsewhere, they really saw themselves as an integral piece of the primary complex. Alec McGillis is now an award-winning reporter at ProPublica. But in the late 90s, he was another young reporter at the Monitor.
They really did regard themselves as kind of guardians of the process and guardians of the privilege.
Like, it was so drummed into you constantly.
It was up to New Hampshire reporters to inform the first-in-the-nation voters. They could read side-by-side comparisons on issues, features on what candidates did before they wanted to be president. And there were, of course, reports from local town halls and house parties.
For weeks, it was just all day, every day, you were at events and events and events and events and just driving all over the place and talking to the candidate, talking to their campaign. I mean, it was just, it's a frenzy. Mm-hmm. And you felt super important.
So the connection between the local press and the voters, it also helped build another important relationship, the one between the local press and the candidates. And the currency that relationship provided was incredible access.
How are you?
Happy to do it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You'd have these campaign events where you'd have the entire National Press Corps there, that huge pack coming in from out of town. And they would be clamoring to get to talk to the candidate. And you, as the young local reporter, would be sort of secreted away waiting for your half hour alone with him because you were entitled to a level of access that much more experienced national reporters were not, because in that period, your readers or your viewers mattered more to the campaign than whoever was reading the Washington Post.
I would bet that every former New Hampshire political reporter has some sort of story like this. A moment where you, the New Hampshire reporter, were chosen ahead of or instead of national reporters. You mattered more. Your news outlet mattered more. Because your readers, the New Hampshire voters, mattered more. The point of the interview was to give readers a sense of who this candidate was. But it was also pretty cool for the reporter. The stories that would come from those interviews, they could influence the campaign, make national news, and they'd definitely help you get your next job.
I had clips about George Bush in my backyard, you know what I mean, who had just been elected president of the United States. So, like, I mean, I feel like the primary ended and I sent out my resume.
But this is the part in the story of the media and the primary where things begin to get a little sticky.
You end up verging into a little bit just being part of the kind of first in the nation industrial complex.
Let me give you a quick example. Sarah remembers a story she did at the Monitor about Michigan, about how they were trying to kick New Hampshire out of the first in the nation spot. So Secretary of State Bill Gardner was involved, the so-called guardian of the primary for the last four decades. And Sarah wrote a story about him and how he was trying to keep Michigan from stealing the primary.
My stance was like, go Bill Gardner. You know what I mean? Like, he's our guy. I'm sure I brought up, I in the stories, I was like expressing Michigan's position, but I wasn't really interrogating ours.
Sometimes reporting on the primary can turn into defending the primary.
At the Democratic Convention, will you support New Hampshire's continued first in the nation?
You guys
status?
Are really good at bribery, man. I tell you what.
Yes, this is the quid pro quo that I'm asking you for right now.
I don't have any quid or pro.
In 2000, when Sarah Koenig and Alec MacGillis were on the beat, the Monitor wasn't the only game in town.
There would be, you know, the statewide news outlets, the Union Leader, to some degree NHPR, WMUR. You'd also have local papers, regional papers, papers like Foster's.
This is my colleague Josh Rogers. He's been covering politics in New Hampshire for nearly two decades.
Different papers, you know, cover things with different intensity. But, I mean, the bottom line is there was more.
The New Hampshire primary is seen as this, like, good thing, a public service that we provide for the rest of the country. And somewhere along the line, New Hampshire journalists started seeing themselves as participants in that thing instead of neutral observers. And that can shape reporting on the primary in subtle and not so subtle ways. We've done boostery sounding stories here at NHPR, like this one from 2016, celebrating the importance of the, quote, humble house party.
Why is it that in an era of big data, big money politics, candidates still see value in these smaller, more informal gatherings?
You do, in New Hampshire, still pick up votes.
We also did a profile of Gardner that year that barely questioned him. But then there's this.
When it came to protecting the presidential primary, I was a biased reporter. I will own that proudly. I was a biased reporter.
Scott Spradling was WMUR's political director for 12 years. And WMUR, or Channel 9, is New Hampshire's only statewide television news station.
If John McCain's plan is one step at a time.
Full disclosure, I interned and freelanced there in college. Now, New Hampshire voters can get Boston stations, too, but when it comes to the primary, WMUR is king.
Mitt Romney introduced himself to Concord retirees by talking.
They report from the campaign trail. They air lots of interviews with candidates. They often invite voters to join them for those conversations. And they co-host national debates, so they do a lot.
Good morning and welcome to Close Up New Hampshire. For the next 2 weeks.
And when Scott Spradling started at WMUR, he says at first,
I tried to just sort of be a filter for what I was hearing and then, like, reflect it back so that people could make up their own
minds.
And
then you fell in love.
Well, yeah. I mean, I fell in love with the primary because, my gosh, she's such a lovely mistress.
Before the 2000 election, he was assigned to go down to Delaware. They wanted an early primary, too. And the guardians of the New Hampshire primary told candidates, if you campaign in Delaware, you will feel the wrath of the New Hampshire voter. And how were the voters going to find out? Scott Spradling.
My news director sent me 5-6 hours south to go camp out in Delaware and wait for a gotcha moment. The whole thing was supposed to be catch the guy in the act. Show the people of New Hampshire that he's running around with somebody else.
Turns out, didn't work out. He didn't get the story. But that's not the point. The point is, for Scott Spradling, protecting the New Hampshire primary was part of the gig. And he says that's true of WMUR political directors through today.
100 years after ballots were cast in New Hampshire's first presidential primary, the tradition is under fire again. Despite recognition of its importance.
Remember, the New Hampshire primary is a political institution, protected and upheld by powerful people who stand to benefit from its survival. And so reporting that doesn't interrogate that institution, well, it seems to apply a different standard. Why is it okay to not be objective about the fact that New Hampshire's first?
Well, I guess because in this particular argument, I would say respectfully that the results speak for themselves. I think that New Hampshire, for a number of unique reasons.
Scott says New Hampshire is small, accessible, gives long shot candidates a chance. He says New Hampshire makes better presidents. Now, some of those things are facts. New Hampshire is small. It is easy to get around here. Candidates have campaigned in New Hampshire on a shoestring budget. But whether our voters make better presidents, whether we deserve to be first, those are opinions. No one who works at WMUR now would sit for an interview with us, but the station's news director, Alicia McDevitt, sent us a statement, and it reads, quote, "The first in the nation primary is a big story because it's a New Hampshire tradition. These are lines taken out of our broader reporting of the New Hampshire primary. WMUR does not take positions. We obviously cover those who support the New Hampshire primary and their reasons for doing so. But that does not mean we take an editorial position," end quote. Part of what we're trying to do here now is put every piece of the primary under the microscope. Ask the questions that make people here uncomfortable. And some people certainly are not pleased with that, including local journalists like Joe McQuaid, editor-at-large of the New Hampshire Union Leader, the only statewide newspaper that we've got. Here he is recently on C-SPAN.
The local public radio station in New Hampshire did a podcast this year called Stranglehold.
McQuaid wouldn't do an interview with us for this episode.
And it's a series ostensibly, well, it's about the New Hampshire presidential primary, but it's very negative about the primary. And I'm wondering, all the people in New Hampshire who support and listen to that station, what are they getting for their buck?
Now, I would argue what we are doing is not negative, but I understand why my colleagues would be mad or at least baffled. The primary has made New Hampshire's local media important. All local media, us too. It's boosted careers, helped raise money. In the 2016 election, WMUR sold $28 million in primary-related ads. We dangle the primary when we're recruiting reporters to our station. We use it as messaging during fund drives. And when the election rolls around, we are in demand. In the 2012 election, my colleague Josh Rogers made nearly $20,000 filing extra stories on the primary for National Public Radio. And Josh has got just as many stories of insane access to candidates as anybody else does.
You know, in 2004, you know, the Howard Dean campaign, like, rented a sports bar in Manchester and invited reporters to, you know, kind of hang out. You know, I shot pool with Howard Dean. Like, you know, it seems kind of preposterous. I mean, you couldn't.
But now the access is just not the same. Why? You already know the answer. The internet, social media, the way we all consume news now, the high thresholds being set to get on the debate stage.
They don't need to build the kind of relationship that they had historically with local media. And while getting an endorsement from a paper is something that any campaign would want, they also know that the record reflects that, you know, those things may not make a hell of a lot of difference.
The Concord Monitor used to be a place candidates looked to for that coveted endorsement. But now, editor Ralph Jimenez says that the Monitor doesn't even have enough people to form a proper editorial board. And that's why this year, for the first time in decades, they're not going to bother endorsing a candidate.
The staff is so reduced that on any given day, we couldn't get four or five people together, even for a top-tier candidate. And if you can't do all of them, or most of them at least, it's not fair to just do a few and write about them. So we're forced economically to take ourselves out of the game for endorsement purposes. I actually wouldn't be surprised if this is the last real New Hampshire primary, but that's a debate for another day, I guess.
It's sobering that the resources of the local paper in Concord, New Hampshire, have shriveled to the point where it couldn't even assemble half a minion. But not because it can't offer an endorsement. That may or may not be relevant. But it isn't vital. It's all the other coverage, the local reporting that the Monitor and countless other papers no longer provide, the kind that the national media parachuting in will never do, that we all should be worried about.
It's just another reason why we're launching a series about the crisis in local news. and we want to hear your stories. Do you feel underserved? Or, if you're a reporter, spread too thin? Do you have specific examples of stories hiding in plain sight for lack of coverage? Please get in touch. Our email is onthemedia@wnyc.org. And please, in the subject line, put local news. Big thank you to the hosts and producers at New Hampshire Public Radio who brought us these stories. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova Burgess, Michael Loewinger, Leah Fetter, John Hanrahan, and Asla Chaturvedi. We had more help from Anthony Bansi. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.